Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Jackie Cation here. You're listening to The Dork Forest. You know the websites, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com, if you like a determiner. JackieCation.com has everything. Both of my podcasts, all of the stand-up stuff, the new album, links to YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all the things. But so, I think, does dorkforest.com, where you can look at old videos of different shows. Anyway, if you want to support the show, tell people about the show, review it on iTunes, thumbs it up on Pandora or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, I appreciate that. You can donate. You can donate monthly. PayPal lets you do that. You can also do my Venmo if you like. It's at Jackie Cation absolutely everywhere. And my email address is jackie@jackiecation.com. And that's what the PayPal is. The PayPal link is on jackiecation.com and dorkforest.com. And go to any of them. Thanks for listening. There's merch. There's stand-up. There's tour guide. You know, you can find out where I'm touring. This is getting long. So let's get into the show.
It's happening. I'm Jackie Cation, and I'm in my garage. And I am sitting here with Barbara Millay, and you are going to – I'm very excited. It's when this comes out, it's going to be right around your birthday,
That's right. April Fools.
April Fools. That's the 1st of April, you guys. I'm not kidding. And Barbara Millay, her Twitter handle is at B, as in Barbara, MC, as in Mick. MC, and then Melee, M-E-L-E. It'll be in the notes. So if you want to follow her on Twitter, and at the very least, say happy birthday, do that. And then, but we're going to dork out about flowers, and maybe she might post on her birthday where you could send her flowers. And that would be hilarious. And because you like flowers? What's happening? I don't know a lot about flowers.
Yeah.
They're very pretty.
Oh my gosh, there's so much I could tell you about flowers. So it all started when I was a wee toddler, and my grandmother was a landscape architect. So my earliest memories are hanging out in the garden with her and, you know, learning all about plants. But she had 7 daughters, and my mom is the only one who did not also become a landscape architect.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Seriously, 6 daughters and they all became landscape architects? That's
7 daughters. 7. And 3
or six,
boys.
Hi, Catholic much? Irish?
Yeah, bingo, on the nose.
Oh, that's I'm familiar with the genre.
Yeah, Irish, Spanish, Catholic, so.
There you go, fair
all
enough.
All sides.
All sides,
yeah.
So Catholic.
Yes. So I wanted to do something that, you know, connected with like these really great memories I had from childhood, but not sort of, I guess, like betray my mom.
Because she didn't like it.
Well, it would have seemed sort of like I was calling out allegiance to a different part of the family, right? If I went and did what all of her sisters did.
Right. Can I quickly ask what did your mother do?
She has her master's in child art therapy. So super different path.
Different path, but still cool. She might paint a flower. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And so for some reason to me that translated to working in a flower shop. And so I got my first job when I was 18, and now it's over 20 years later. And
right.
I literally have not had a job outside of flowers in over 20 years.
The flower industry is where you work.
That's right.
And just so people know, I don't know if the name on the side of the video, Pete is your husband.
Yes.
And it's his Zoom account, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Let us not sweat it. Here's the weird thing is that, so you go into flowers, you now know what about, I mean, I don't. Here's all I know. When I was a kid, my stepmother told me that carnations were lame. So never get her carnations. That they were somehow, and we're from a little factory town in, she's from Cudahy. I'm from South Milwaukee. We grew up in, you know, she grew up in Cudahy, never really went anywhere. And she's like, They're kind of white trash, Jackie. Carnations. Don't do it. Don't do it. And you're like, oh, okay. All right. And I won't get you carnations. I'm nine. So what do I know from flowers? And first of all, the much maligned carnation. What do you think of that?
So actually, I do know from having spoken to lots of people over the years that what flowers can be obtained geographically is very different from one place to the next. So for example, in New York City, we're a port city, right? So it's much easier and faster for us to get flowers
You could get orchids. Because their things are coming in. Mm-hmm. And all right.
See, you know some stuff about flowers.
No, I read a mystery novel where the guy really liked orchids.
Was that
It might have been. It was Hercule Poirot, possibly.
Oh my gosh. I used to watch his stuff when I was a kid.
Yeah, I think it's on PBS. And but was it him? And it might have been Hero, a guy named Hero. And whatever it was an old-timey mystery series that I thoroughly enjoyed. But he was very, very heavy, and he never left the house. And people would bring the mystery to him, and he would be in his attic working with orchids.
From the show. Yeah. That's a well-known floristry gesture. Yes.
So that's all. I don't really know anything about orchids except for that they're kind of hard to keep alive.
They actually are very long-lasting, even cut. But because they're exotic, right, they either have to be – they're actually genetically grown from splices of stem that then they get put into, like, petri material, and they get replicated. So hundreds of plants from the same one piece then grow into, like, hundreds of individual new plants.
Do orchids occur in nature, or were they genetically modified?
They do, but in nature they grow symbiotically on – other trees, like in the rainforest.
The
cost of like growing them in a lab versus constantly having to harvest them in a rainforest, you know. So I worked in Chicago for a couple of years as a florist, and there they absolutely would say yes, use the carnations, use the lilies, use the mums, the roses, the baby's breath. And if I ever went to touch an orchid, they'd be like, no, we have to keep that for the special clients. So I could very much see in Milwaukee carnations being, I've never heard them called the white trash of flowers, but that's amazing.
they might have been overused. And so possibly calling, and I get to use that term, you guys. This is the whitest of whitey magoos in the whole wide world. So that's the way it goes. And so if you're all mad about it, so sad, too bad. Get over it. Right. And I'm the Joe Rogan of calling carnations out. So ridiculous. But so how many different places have you worked as a florist? Have you done destination floral trips?
I have taught floral design in Mexico, in Monterrey.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So you have been different places where clearly, obviously, geographically, as you were saying, there are different flowers to be had. So is the longest place you've worked in New York?
Yes.
Okay. So you start working at a florist shop. The first thing is don't touch the orchids.
Right.
Don't touch the expensive flowers because you're going to break them. How do you break a flower? If you're a florist and you're brand new,
lots of ways. So actually, I broke a lot of flowers my first week because I was in a totally brand new style of shop in the city, and they wanted to teach everybody basically from scratch. So they were excited that I didn't have any previous experience. Which always, when I had walked into a shop and said, "Hey, I'll sweep your floors. I don't care. I just want to learn," they'd be like, "Come back when you have experience." But sort of chicken and egg thing, right?
Yeah. How you gonna? Yeah.
Yeah. So I got my first break in my first year of college, and there was kind of a intense Dutch woman who's teaching everybody how to make European hand-tied bouquets. And so she gave me a mix of flowers, showed me how to do it once, and then said, okay, do that. And at the time, you know, I was like 17. I had only babysat or like answered the phones right at my local church. So when they asked me how many hours I could work, I was like, I don't, whatever. Here's my schedule, my class schedule. Just work me around that. So for 55 hours, all I did was put these stems together and then take them back apart. And the Dutch woman would just walk back and forth and not say a word. So I didn't know if I was improving or, but right, the poor flowers were all like just totally ready to give up at the end of 55 hours of handling.
And what was, right, because you were you using the same, yes, like 20 flowers?
Yeah.
And what kind of hand tied what? What's it called?
A hand tied bouquet.
Okay. What is that?
It's a very European style. Usually the top of the bouquet is like, it's called a pavé, which means pavement in French. It's very like flat. And all the flowers have a chance to like really be visible rather than, okay, if you do kind of like, different heights and stuff, you're giving more attention to one stem rather than another.
Okay. So a bouquet like that, you might want to carry that if you were getting all married or walking around.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what was in that? What is traditionally in that kind of bouquet?
Lots of like garden stems. So roses for sure, because roses have always been around since like Roman times. Stuff like daisies, because they're really hardy. Foliage, because they support the flowers so that, you know, they show a little bit better. And right, one of the key things with the hand tied is the mechanics of putting it together. So it's one of the like sort of misconceptions about floristry that people think like, yeah, it's flowers. They grow on the side of the road. You can just scoop up a handful. Why do I have to pay you $50 for a bouquet? But right, it makes a big difference if you're putting the stems like vertically next to each other versus like adding every stem at an angle. And when you, okay, do that, the flowers splay out more and you get like a fuller, you know, more attractive presentation. Yeah, yeah. So
I know that in some of the romance novels that I've read in the course of my 100 years, flower design was a skill that they would teach ladies. Mm-hmm. And then there would be flowers in every room.
Because so, it gave the women something to do.
Right, that, right.
You know,
instead of revolution, instead, yes, of murdering everyone in their sleep. So good for them. Good for the, look over there. Look how pretty those flowers are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No time for murder.
No time for murdering. You got flowers to gather. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So if, so roses, you said, have been around as a flower that people were psyched about since Roman times.
Yeah. They actually, there's lots of plants in the family of Rosaceae, which is a really big, right, branching out. So, apples are actually related to roses.
Oh,
we can eat apples. Rose hips and rose leaves can be used medicinally for a lot of stuff. And they kind of grow like nuts on their own. So,
yeah.
And then they could be cultivated so that the plants, they're one of the very few plants that for floristry reliably produce. So they, the bushes have been hybridized. So they grow, they offer blooms every 6 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you think most plants, like maybe you see the blooms for a couple of weeks and then their season's gone. But
we have our orange tree and our lemon tree are both blooming. And,
oh, nice. That's early.
Well, I'm in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So
March.
Yeah. But we usually have two crops of oranges a year. We get a crop in the winter and then we get a crop in around July.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the cycle is from a blooming of a thing to a fruiting of a thing.
Well, it depends on the thing.
The thing,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
So there's always oranges on the tree. That's that I know. There's always lemons on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Meyer lemon tree and a Valencia orange tree.
Oh, so, you're so lucky.
So lucky. Very lucky. My mother-in-law has a neighbor with an avocado tree.
Oh my gosh.
And it's avocado season right now.
Uh-huh.
So we go visit her once a week and we come home with 10 avocados.
Like, and she right keeps off the five, tree.
Right off the tree. And but it's only for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to need an avocado ever again, except for those, like those 6 weeks, it becomes 1,000 avocados in my head.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I'm good. I don't need an avocado.
I actually just found out and tested it recently that you can freeze or refrigerate avocados until you're ready to eat them.
How are you? Are you opening it up or are you freezing it whole?
Right in the skin. Whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we have three that need eating right now.
I wonder,
I'm gonna leave right now.
No, yeah, I don't know how they would hold up if you froze them now.
Right. It's if they were ripe, but if they were just picked, they probably last longer than you could thaw them, mm-hmm. and then they would ripen, and then you could eat them.
Right.
But it might be too late for these six avocados, so I'll be having avocado toast. I'll be having different things with avocado.
Guacamole.
Sometimes we just eat avocado spoon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's delicious.
You could make a hair mask with some of those.
Oh, could do that. Yeah. Could bring it off to the Korean spa that I go to sometimes. they use a cucumber.
Put this in my hair.
What flowers are now? You want to do anecdotes about flowers, or do you want to tell me your favorite flowers, or do you want to do both?
I can't really. It's really hard to say favorite flowers because I love them all. I actually think it's easier to say the ones I don't like.
Oh, interesting. So what would make you not like a flower?
So there's one called Tweedia, which is really cute. It's a very pale blue and it's really tiny, but it reeks. It smells like when you cut it, it smells like cat musk.
Oh, weird. And how do you smell this?
Spell it?
Yeah. How do you spell
the name
that flower?
Of the flower?
Yeah.
Tweed, like the fabric.
Like a tweed, yeah.
And then IA.
Yeah. Tweedia. Mm-hmm. And the flowers don't smell. It smells when you cut it.
Yeah, because a lot of plants have this. One of their like self-defense mechanisms is if they get injured. They seep out different kinds of sap and theirs happens to be really stinky, probably to warn animals away. Right. So they don't eat them. Yeah.
Yeah. But
that it is. Just, they get all sticky. It's actually really toxic for your skin and your, like, if you get it in your eyes, you can go blind. So
what? Yeah. I don't think that you're wrong to not like that.
This
flower.
Is a risk value equation that I am not getting behind.
Is anyone asking for a Tweedia in their
yep.
Are they usually goth? What's happening?
No, I think they are so married to like a pastel aesthetic that they have to have it.
And they've only just seen, so if you've cut them and they stink, mm-hmm. and you are wearing gloves and you don't touch your face, mm-hmm. And then you put it in, you know, you wrap it and you give it to them. Does it continue to stink when it gets to their house?
So any stem universally starts to seal itself within seconds of being cut. So probably, you know, after 5 minutes, it won't continue to smell.
So they don't even know what they're doing.
Right.
They don't even know. And if they cut it again when they get home, because, you know, and tell me if I'm wrong, you get a bouquet of flowers. Or you get some flowers, you're supposed to sort of cut them at an angle and then stick them in water.
Yes. So many people don't understand that or realize it.
Is it because the stem has sealed itself?
Yeah. And then it can't drink.
Yeah. Then it can't drink. So once they get their Tweedia home, they're mm-hmm. and they're smart, they cut them again and they're like, oh, I have to rub my face, and then they go blind.
What is that smell? Yeah. And then they wake up the next morning with like a giant swollen nose.
Oh my gosh. Dum da dum dum. So yeah.
This actually is a good segue to an anecdote.
Please.
So the first shop I worked in, I was in college, and every spring it was really common to sell paperwhite bulbs, which they're a type of narcissus. So the same family as daffodils.
Oh, pretty.
They're very, very fragrant. And a lot of people enjoy them because they're like, oh, spring is coming, right? Mm-hmm. But we would just sell the bulbs loose. And the shop I was working at was on the Upper West Side, so very family neighborhood. We had a lot of regular customers. It was super sweet. And I had a husband come in a couple weeks after the wife had been in, and he was like, oh, do you guys still have those onion things that, you know, you were selling? I'm like, onion things. And he's like, he proceeds to tell me, yeah, my wife bought some and put them in the fridge to like keep them cold until she was ready to do something with them. And he thought they were some kind of weird shallot.
He thought they were an onion.
He cut them and ate them and ended up in the hospital with poisoning. And
dude,
I was a college kid, so I'm like, are you going to sue us?
Right, right.
What to say to him? Right. He's like, no, I survived. I thought it was funny.
I thought it was funny, so I thought I'd get some more and give it to my buddy. You're like, no, sir.
Yes, and please don't do that.
Yeah, please don't do that. That's that. I do love a daffodil, though. I like, you know what mm-hmm. I like? I like, I'm kind of, like, it's not an exciting. You know, like I'm almost a caricature of a, because there are people who like an exotic tweedia or an onion, mm-hmm. and I like a daffodil, I like a daisy, I like a tulip a great deal.
You like happy flowers.
I do enjoy a happy flower because, mm-hmm. Much like books, why have a sad flower? Are there yeah. Wait a minute? Are there sad flowers?
Of course.
What would be a sad flower.
Well. It's become a trend recently to dye and preserve flowers. So we can actually, there's lots of flowers that are black now, which does appeal to the goth crowd.
Right, right.
But there are also flowers that are typically associated with like death and mourning. So white lilies are one of those. Tuber roses, which because they're very fragrant, it's not a rose. I don't okay. know why it's named that actually. But the fragrance, you know, a lot of the stronger smelling flowers help mask like embalming. Mask and
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And that has also always been like a very human thing.
Right. To get the stinkiest flowers, yes. For the funeral or yep. the wake at least. Mm-hmm. And, what about calla lilies? Are those a funeral? Is that a funeral flower? Or
I think they had a moment in like the early 90s because everything was very not retro, but like, you know, like the really sleek lines on stuff. And callas yeah. are a very sleek line flower.
They're tall too, aren't they?
Yeah, they're actually, they come in really different ones. So there's the big ones that are in Diego Rivera's paintings. Those are okay. called open cut callas. And they're in his paintings because they're natively grown in Mexico. So they're huge, like the biggest, the most beautiful callas you can get. But then there's also mini callas, which the heads are like only a couple inches big and they come in every color, almost every color you can think of.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. And it just occurred to me, we have a plant that our neighbor gave us. It's a dragon fruit plant.
Whoa.
And it only blooms at night. Like once every 3 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. But the thing is we've never gotten a fruit off of it because to be pollinated, the bug doesn't live here. And, and Andy said that he was talking with Ruck, our neighbor who's, from Thailand. And Ruck is like, well, if you diddle the flower stems mm-hmm. inside, I was like, what are you fingering the flowers? That's a lot.
Yeah.
And so Andy has tried it.
No success yet.
No success yet. But I believe Ruck next door, they had a dragon fruit. They got one. So Ruck has just a really good technique.
Technique is a big part of floral design.
Exactly. Him and his wife are actually very good with their garden and they have a lot of things that flower that are very pretty. Andy likes flowers more than me. I like vegetables. Mm-hmm. So I plant the vegetable garden and he plants the flowers. So
well, it's good because the pollinators are happy with both. So they'll bounce around.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. So they're psyched. They're psyched mm-hmm. to have the selection.
Right.
okay. So what are some of the, like, people come in, mm-hmm. And because a lot of a florist, the job at a shop, a flower shop, is customer service.
Yes.
And you want to work with flowers, not with people.
Well, I actually am an extrovert, so I do enjoy, you know. So
Good.
I've definitely had days where I wake up on the wrong side of the bed and I don't want anybody to talk to me. But I, you know, my first customer just starts chit-chatting and like, oh, okay, I'm better now.
Yeah. It is. I mean, sometimes you just need a little social to get you out of the funk anyway. So but is there a job in the florist shop where you wouldn't like, oh, you just spend the whole day in the back?
I mean, I think even if you only work in the office, you have to answer the phones. But there are a lot of shops that operate with people who exclusively condition the flowers. So chop everything.
Okay.
So they don't come ready to go, right? They get cut a couple days before they arrive in the shop, and they have to be treated with like really cold air, with sealants on the bottom of the stems, hydrators, and then they travel, right, to get from the farms to the shops. So when they arrive, you have to kind of, you know, zhuzh them, wake them up a
bit.
Sure. And
you're a flower fluffler. Fluffer. It's flower fluffing.
Many ways to fluff flowers.
How many ways though? Because the thing is if you get the flowers and they're 3 days old and they've been treated and they're cold, what's the path to sort of get them into the case so that people go, oh my gosh, I want that.
So it really depends on the stem structure. So stuff like tulips and daffodils are really great at retaining water. You sometimes don't even have to cut them, like recut them. You just put them right in water and they will absorb through the stems.
Okay. Like not even through the bottom, but through the sides.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's great.
So they're super easy. And then stuff like roses, they actually have very fibrous stems. So what helps them hydrate really well is capillary action. So you want to recut the stem and put it in very hot water, not boiling. It should be like a warm bath. So you use your wrist or your fingers, right? Just make sure
it's like a baby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you put really, really hot water on the stems and then you put them in the fridge again where they're cold and the differential temperatures, like the water shoots right up to the flower. It still takes about 6 hours, but then like they're fully hydrated and they will still last another 2 weeks when they get to somebody's house.
Oh, because that's a big deal too, right? Is how long are they going to last when they leave the shop.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk into another shop, can you tell how skilled they are by what you're looking at?
Well, I think display is one indicator, right, of how they're caring for the flowers. Another one is, I think that people have this kind of, like they get scared, like, oh, flowers are complex or they never last for me. But it's actually a lot like shopping for produce. Like if you see, you know, a banana or an apple has a brown spot, like obviously it got bruised somewhere. It's the same with flowers of all kinds.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Like the stem should be green and fresh looking. They shouldn't be like starting to yellow or get spots.
Okay. That makes perfect sense actually. Because the reason it has a spot is because there's trouble.
Right.
Something is happening. Now, so this is going by so fast. We're at like 20, we're at like almost a half an hour. But I wanted to ask you, so did you go to school and learn about stem structure and that thing, or did you just learn on the job?
So I learned a lot from my grandmother, and I did learn design. I learned on the job, but it's actually one of the newer developments, newer like in the past 20 years, not 20 years. Yeah, maybe about 20 years. So right when I started working in a flower shop, flower schools started to open and become a thing. So now there are avenues for people who, if they want to get into the field or they're not sure, they want to find out more, they can take some classes and find out what it's like to work with the flowers.
And is it botany? Are you studying stamen? You know how there's different parts of a
Yeah, stamens, pistils.
Yeah, there we go.
Seventh grade biology.
Well, you know, I once went to, there is a glass flower exhibit in Boston, Massachusetts.
Wow.
It is at the Harvard Natural Museum, and they are hand-blown glass. It's called the flower exhibit.
Okay.
And it's in Harvard, in their natural museum. And in the late 1800s, early 1900s, German botanists glass blew different parts of plants so that people could study plants for science.
Yeah, because they wouldn't die.
You could really get in there and see like the cut stems and the different parts of, and then they shipped these glass things from Germany to Boston, to Harvard. And it's an entire, like two, I think it's at least one giant room. It might be two rooms now of small rooms. And there's just signs on every case. Do not lean against the case. Do not lean against the case. And Andy took me to it when we were in Boston once many years ago, because he thought it would be pretty. Mm-hmm. He thought it would be tulips, and it would be, you know, when you go and see, you know, you go to the fair, someone's blowing glass, they're making unicorns and daisies and daffodils. This thing was not beautiful, but it was beautiful because it was science and it was amazing. But I think if you ever make it to Boston, you should look into seeing that flower exhibit at the Harvard Natural, because it's open to the public.
That, and it's called the flower exhibit?
I believe so. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is part of why I've been in this for over two decades. It's because there's always like some new, you know, like knowledge or way of working with flowers. Like it's such a big world, and you can really pick your lane, you know, like,
yeah.
So I really love teaching floral design, but that didn't really become a thing until recently.
Okay.
Or you could work events, or you could only do gifts or sympathy designs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Or you could work in the growing side, like, or the wholesale side.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like business side, and then there's design side, and then there's science side.
Yeah.
And so are you getting to teach floral design more?
Yes. I'm teaching for the New York Botanical Gardens.
That's neat.
Yes, it's very cool. And I, with a good friend of mine who teaches photography and social media, we're going to be sort of like touring a class this summer.
Okay. So, how would people find that? What's that called?
So it's called Style and Shoot. And
I get it.
That is going to be July 30th through the Botanical Gardens, and then in August up in Chautauqua, New York, with the Women's Club. But I don't remember the date off the top of my head.
But Style and Shoot, are you guys going to have your own Instagram kind of situation?
Yeah, I mean, because it's definitely part of the equation, right? Like, you can make the most beautiful thing, but if you take a crap photo of it, people won't appreciate it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. And there's lots of, silly little tricks that can give you a better photo.
Okay. And so, but you're teaching people how to do floral design, like sort of like the like the very angry Dutch woman.
Yes.
but hopefully with a little more feedback.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't just need to 50 hours of how does that look?
Oh, and that would be torture for me and the student.
Right?
Yeah.
So how do you start to teach? Like, do you start to teach people how to design bouquets and flowers? And
so I think a really good place to start, no matter what level of familiarity people have, is the conditioning, because there's always like better ways, or some people find that one way works better for them than another. And that could be like the minerals that are in your water. It could be the temperature of where they're hydrated. You know, there's so many factors. So, and I didn't learn like proper conditioning on the job. I actually learned it when I first started teaching like 6 or 7 years ago. So, you know, there's like on the fly out of necessity, and then there's like the right way to do it.
Right. Like somebody put some thought into it. There was trial and error. Science was involved.
Yes.
And then there's someone wants to own a flower shop and they're like, well, this is what I do. And it usually works.
Right.
And So
People don't have to trial and error it so much anymore because of the flower schools and because there's a organization called Society of American Florists, which is SAF for short. And there's different membership levels, but they do very much like they're involved in the horticultural side, the science side, the design side. So they're part of the Philadelphia Flower Show every year, which is really cool.
Do you go to flower shows?
I've been to a few, but I guess, I don't know. Everybody has like their own style too. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that they do at the shows is very technical and usually involves hard materials, like non-floral stuff, which is like,
did they turn it into like Comic-Con?
Yes. And it's like it's not like my jam at all.
No, you just want all flowers. I don't need to see the FX. Mm-hmm. Right. It doesn't need to have Christmas lights in it. Just make the flowers work.
You 100% get it.
Yeah. Because I mean, I like a tech convention as much as the next person. Mm-hmm. But if I went to a flower convention, I would want to see the flowers. I once went to, get this, a beach glass convention.
What?
And it was not good. I know that you are not surprised. And but I, when I was a kid, I freaking loved beach glass, right? I grew up next to Lake Michigan. People used to drink and drive their boats and throw their beer glasses over beer bottles over the into Lake Michigan. And so you would walk on the beaches and you would find brown and green, you know, Heineken. You'd be pretty psyched.
You get a pale blue one, like mermaid glass.
Oh my God. The red was like the gold standard of, there was never any gold. Anyway, but there would be different colored beach glass. And so I was in Erie, Pennsylvania one year with Maria Bamford working a very terrible comedy club that is probably better now. But we did two things in Erie, Pennsylvania that weekend. We went to their art museum, which was a nickel. And had one of each. They had a Matisse, but it was a drawing. They had a statue from Japan, but there was just the one of them. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it was a very small, but actually quite beautiful little art museum. Mm-hmm. And it was $7 to go. And we went, and it was, there was also a convention for beach glass at the Erie, Pennsylvania Convention
Center. Convention.
Yeah. And so I was like, I really want to go to that. It was $15 a piece and it was lame and I was not happy. And then Maria was like, there's an art museum. And I was like, I'm going to be disappointed again. And she was like, let's try. And so we went and it was $7 and it was so much better. But yes. So beach glass, I wanted it just to be sort of, here's a rare piece of beach glass. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's red. I really wanted to see a red piece of beach glass, but it was people who had found, you know, brown and green beach glass and turned it into earrings. I was really, truly disappointed.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. That doesn't like a bummer.
It was lame. It did. It was a clock eater, though. It really took up. got us out of the hotel room.
You went the whole room, like holding out hope there was going to be a sculpture or something made out of beach glass.
Come on.
Exactly.
How cool would that have been is if someone had found enough beach glass to recreate a beer bottle? Mm-hmm. Anything, literally at this point. So what are some of your favorite sort of floral moments, like of your career or of just kind of cool things that you've seen other people do or that you got to do?
So I, one of my favorite weddings that I ever designed for somebody. It wasn't like through me, it was through the shop I was working with, but I was the creative director. So I was, you know, meeting the clients and talking them through ideas and budgets and everything. And this girl, I think it started with an email. She said, I have a $2,000 budget, but the wedding was going to be at Liberty Warehouse, which is kind of a little bit more pricey venue in Brooklyn, because, you know, it's very hipster.
Okay.
And so she came in for the meeting and had the diagram of her whole layout and like, we're going to walk in through here and I want all these moments along the way. And then I want the arch. And I just really frankly and upfront said to her, like, okay, but you know, this isn't a $2,000 wedding, right? This is more like 10 or 15. And I guess it was just maybe, you know, because of where she was in the process of planning, she said, oh, I get it. It's totally, let's just work it out. Right.
Okay.
And, so then two of the most memorable moments in my career came out of that wedding. So one was when we went back at the end of the night to break down.
Yeah.
And she was like so overjoyed. You could tell she had the best day and it was perfect.
That's so cool.
You know, we're coming in like when everybody's leaving. We're not really supposed to be seen or anything. But she like threw her arms around me and was like, Barbara, everything was perfect. You were so magical. And it was just like, yep, this is what I'm in it for. You know?
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other memorable part of that was the people who worked at the venue, obviously, like they do this day in and day out. So they're over it, right? They just want to get out of there.
Right.
So they were turning the lights off on us. And as they're walking out, they're like, don't make a mess. And right then, like right at the exact same moment is when my husband had his hands on a 20-inch cylinder full of water and sand and glass and went to pick it up and it collapsed in his hands. And just water and stones like ran everywhere.
Like, oh my God.
I'm so glad the lights were off so that they didn't see this happen.
No witnesses. Yeah. We'll clean it up.
And somehow also miraculously he got no cuts like at all.
I was going to say, if it crushed into itself, he might've cut his hands really bad.
That is
outstanding.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Flowers, my wedding, I had a wedding, you guys, and I didn't know anything about it. All I knew was that we were going to get married at this dim sum restaurant in downtown Los Angeles. And 200 people were coming because I was 39 years old. And
Holy
when you
crap.
Get married later, everyone comes because it's a spectacle. And everyone's like, oh, I thought you were dead, half of my relatives. And they're like, you're getting married to a man? What's happening? So it went on, you know, it went on like that. But here's the scoop. Joe Wilson, one of the original hosts of the Dork Forest. If you go back 2006 to, I believe, 2010, Joe Wilson, co-host, delightful man, love him dearly. He now lives in Albany, New York, with his wife, Kathy Zaloga, who Kathy Zaloga is a florist. And I've always wanted her to come on and talk about flowers. And so she used to do the flowers for the Super Bowl every year.
Whoa.
And she would always do Christmas trees at, I think it was Eddie Murphy's house. He wanted like six Christmas trees.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it was, their gift to me for the wedding was she did the flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And which now I know was a $10,000 value and was a boat ton of money. All I know was, and he essentially orchestrated it.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, he's an incredibly organized man.
The spouses of florists are long suffering saints.
Right. He's done a lot of heavy lifting. There's been a lot of schlepping.
They get sucked in. One way or the other.
You get sucked in. He got sucked in. He was like, they're paying me, but I'm not going to tell you that this is something I would have chosen to do.
I'm only here because of you, Jackie.
Exactly. I'm only here. Right. And so But you have told, and the flowers were gorgeous. They were gorgeous. She made it my bouquet. She made the bouquet for my sister, who was my matron of honor. And, you know, very lovely. And then there were some flowers and I did not know. And then she broke it all down.
So much work.
So much work, the two of them.
Yeah.
I just sent him, I don't know, is marijuana legal in New York?
Medicinally, yes. And the laws here are kind of funny. Like you can have up to a certain amount on your person, but you can't be using it.
Oh, weird.
In public. Yeah. Yeah.
Watch me eat the gummy bear.
It's not touching my mouth.
No, you can't hire you. No, no, no. And so
I just liked it. I'm done.
That's weird. Yeah, because I just so I didn't send him anything anyway. But he enjoys because it's legal here. And yeah. I don't use it because I fall asleep. But he enjoys it. And we are friends. So
did she like ask for your input, or you just were like, make it purple, and she like ran with it?
She knew what the colors were. That was it, because it was at a Chinese restaurant, and I decided to co-opt Chinese culture. She actually helped me choose my. I tried to pick my wedding dress alone, and I can't. I dress like this. This is not okay. So I got this outfit and then it was terrible and I cried and I was like, I'm going to look super dumb. And so I called Kathy and Kathy was like, well, there is a wedding dress store. Do you want to go to the wedding dress store, Jackie? And I was like, yes, let's go to the wedding dress store. And we went and we bought, it was a bridesmaid's dress. And it was, I think it was $300 and it was red. And funnily enough, the dim sum place, it's now closed, but the dim sum place was enormous. Our side had my wedding with my husband. We got married to each other, 200 people.
Luckily.
And then on the other side was a wedding with a Chinese couple who wore white. They co-opted the Whitey Magoo.
So everything was in balance.
Yeah, it was. It was very yin and yang, you guys. But it was, she did not ask.
That's okay.
Which is good because she was the professional. I was like, well, you'll know better than me what will look good and what will look right as people push dim sum carts around. I don't, I just wanted there to be enough food.
I got really lucky when I got married because Pete came to see me at work and I was working with a black calla lily. And he went, oh, what's that? Can we have that in our wedding? And so then I had a direction. Otherwise, I don't know what I would have been trying to decide like down to the last minute.
Oh, it would have been too big.
I like so many things. Like, how do I just choose one for my wedding? You know,
was it a vampire theme? A black calla lily? What was the?
We had super rich jewel tone. So like dark, deep reds and purples and then the black callas. And we only did flowers for the wedding party because we got married at, like a gardens recreational hall. So like,
oh, that's,
yeah, yeah. It was beautiful background. There's no need to put stuff on the table.
Right. You didn't need to do more. Plus you would have had to break it down.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's your wedding.
Actually, I got my first employer did everything for me.
Oh, that was her gift.
Yeah. Whenever people say like, oh, I'm going to do my own wedding flowers. I'm like, Nope. You're just stressing yourself out. Don't do it.
Right. Right.
It's a lot of work.
It's
and you
a
have
lot
a million
of work.
Things to think about. So.
Yeah. And it was incredibly well done. So.
Good.
Yeah, that is great. So when people go to pick flowers, is there any suggestions that you would that you would give them?
I think if you go into an actual flower shop, just say, make me something great, whatever you like for like whatever your budget is. And,
just sort of give them the budget and go, I want to send my dad flowers for Father's Day, which is weird, but fun. And I'm willing to spend $50.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go, okay, well,
Yeah, they know what's freshest. They, you know, really love the material. So they're going to make you something that's like really fun.
Okay.
And it also like allows them to sort of to be creative and right.
That's right. Which is fun for them too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it'll probably end up being the best. Like, but if there was a flower that like, if I said, and no carnations, because there will be that there will be black backlash. Mm-hmm. And they will just go, okay. Yeah. I mean, just tell them what you definitely don't want.
Right.
And if there was something you did want.
Yeah.
And because I think one time I went in and I was going to get flowers and they were out of season, mm-hmm. which is weird because I thought that everything was always in season because of
hot houses. I mean, especially in California.
Right. Oh, no, I was at Parkway Floral in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh.
And so in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Parkway Floral, and you go in and you're like, do you have any daisies? And they're like, no, we do not. And we have carnations. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Nancy Cation would not enjoy those. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but if there's a flower you definitely want, and if they don't have it, they will usually just suggest something comparable, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, because if they don't have any tulips, they'll be like, well, you know, these sort of teacup roses or something or mm-hmm. some
yeah,
other.
I mean, probably like the most sought after flower any time of year is peonies because they're so like big and lush and some of them are fragrant.
I can't even picture a peony. What does a peony look like?
They're round and fluffy, but in a floral way.
All right, in a flower-like way.
Yes.
And, weird. You know what they look like?
What?
To me, is a really big carnation. I'm afraid that I don't know anything about flowers. So
you might need to do a side-by-side.
Yeah, because this is, I mean, here's some peonies, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I like the idea of sort of a multicolor one.
Mm-hmm.
Like this one seems to have a lot of different colors attached to it.
That's a Sarah Bernhardt. So when flowers all get their own individual names, I don't know what she did to get a peony named after her. But
right, that is, yeah.
Those are a long-standing, like, tried and true variety. So those peonies, season or not, you can usually find them.
Wait, Sarah Bernhardt?
Sarah.
Yeah. I think she was an actress in England in the early 1800s. Late 1800s.
Really?
Yeah. Sandra Bernhardt, of course, stand-up comic. Sarah Bernhardt, I think, was a famous actress on the stage in London.
I'm going to have to check her out.
Yeah, I can't remember the years, but so people would constantly give her flowers because she was an actress and mm-hmm. she was, you know, again, I have a lot of big gestures today.
And the English definitely have, you know, they go way back with their floral knowledge and cultivating. So there's a lot of English florists that, you know, set the standard.
Have you ever wanted to go to like the Netherlands and see the tulips?
Oh yes. That actually is another like really fun story. When I first started teaching floral design, it was with Flower School in New York. And I was like running a small shop for them. So the professional students could come and like run a shop, right? But what to do in between classes. So I was there, right? And to help out when they were there. And Flower School pre-pandemic did an annual trip to Holland. So you could see the fields and you could see the processing and packing and everything. And I ordered flowers for the shop while the owner was there with a group of students. So the box, and he saw them going by on the conveyor belt. So he grabbed one and wrote, "Hi, Barbara," on the box.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's like such a big world, but also such a small world, you know?
So much so. It's, do you think that you'll get to go now that the pandemic's kind of winding down?
Yeah, I think even last year, some designers started taking small groups to the Netherlands, to Mexico, to Spain. And there are schools in other parts of the world. So I think it would be fantastic to go to like Japan and study floral design there for a bit, you know,
just learn. Would like, you ever, are there museums? Are there like floral museums sort of like, I mean, I'm sure like the history of the tulip thing in the Netherlands is mm-hmm. is so sort of like, I know it.
Right.
Yeah. But there's like, I'm sure there's more obscure things, but it would be amazing. Like I would like to go to Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And see sort of the natural flowers, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there, because I'm sure, you know, six of them want to kill you, but because because a lot of things in Indonesia want to kill you, not just mm-hmm. the government. And so have you, besides Mexico, have you done any, are there dream places that you want to go to? Internationally,
I just the natural environment in Hawaii just blows me away. Even though I haven't been there,
I haven't been there either. Yeah, but I hear it is. It's supposed to be like we have a palmeria that somebody mm-hmm. brought us a stick back mm-hmm. from, and it grew because it's Los Angeles and things just
California.
Grow.
California, uh-huh.
yeah.
And so jealous.
And so it when it flowers, I'm just like, and I have a friend who's Hawaiian and she's like, oh, I did not know that you had. I was like, would you like to make a flower necklace? And she's mm-hmm. like, stop talking to me. I'm just saying it's beautiful, Jackie. All right, I'm not. And like her family is Hawaiian, mm-hmm. right? I mean, and so she goes there a lot and says it is gorgeous.
Yeah.
So
I do follow, you know, it's the age of social media. So I follow a bunch of shops in England, which I think would be super cool to go see in person.
Oh, that's neat. Like what's a good Instagram account in England?
There's a big school called McQueen's, and they are like, if you want to see a top-notch made hand tied, it's McQueen's. They just they're the biggest.
And is it just MC?
They have so much stuff in them. Mm-hmm.
Queens plural.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm gonna go to Chile in a couple of weeks. And Chile, you know, has been growing economically in the past few years. They just had their first democratic election. So they're out from under a regime. My mom's Chilean. Yep. And so I'm going to go down, and I would really love to meet a couple of flower shops that are, you know, they're newer. It's more like the style and type of work we've been doing here.
Okay.
It's just really cool to see it like spread and how the styles change, and people can do things with like totally different types of flowers, but there's always a commonality, you know?
Right. We're pushing the hour, but I need to know this.
Yeah.
How has it changed in the last 30 years?
Yeah. You could go to Milwaukee and see mm-hmm. traditional floral design, right? Which again are like your lilies, roses, carnations, baby's breath, chrysanthemums.
Okay.
Or what's become more like mainstream in the past decade or so are like more delicate natural flowers. So like ranunculus, cosmos, poppies, like, you know, things are very delicate. I think people are really embracing the ephemerality of flowers. It doesn't have to be like, they have to last for a week. It's, you know.
Right. Because poppies, if you touch them, sometimes it'll just fall off.
Yeah.
The petal. Yep. And mm-hmm. so, but they are gorgeous. They are
right.
super delicate, you know, so more of a delicate welcome to Hanoi, 1974. I don't know if you can hear the helicopters in Van Nuys, but there they are. I love the idea of those sort of like baby's breath, but like a bunch of different kind of actual kind of wildflowers. So they feel more wild.
Yeah. Yep. So it's more, I think people are, you know, where in years past, it was like, give me a dozen roses for $50, right? Now it's like, a customer will spend $150, and they really appreciate the artistry and like the colors that are used, the shapes. So that's like what I see spreading in the world now. And it's just super cool.
What's a favorite bouquet that you've made recently that you were kind of really psyched about, that you got to use, what flowers were in it, and how did it end up?
So I'm a big like fantasy nerd, right? Like old, like Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
Oh, there's
that.
Another Dork Forest. Another Dork Forest on the hopper. Yes.
So it was a while ago, but I made for my sister's wedding. She said, like, just make whatever you think is me. And so I took succulents and glued pieces of gold foil onto them.
Oh, cool.
And then mixed them with stuff with like peonies and like thistle. So things that were both very soft, but also like kind of rough and like rustic. Right. And I did like sort of a tester a month before and sent her a photo. And she said, you literally are, I have them crying right now. Like, this is so perfect. So,
so succulents. With different flowers as the greenery, as opposed to just a big fern.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because we like same shapes. So succulents are round, peonies are round. So.
Oh, that makes sense. They kind of shadow each other or mirror each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's neat. I have to say, Barbara Milley, this has been a delightful hour of talking about flowers.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. What is there anything that I should, well, it's her birthday. So it's B M C M E L E.
Yes.
And that is your Twitter handle. And, and you're in New York working at a floral shop. What was the shop in the Upper West Side that you worked at?
It is a different iteration now, but it's called Posies. You can still get really great affordable hand-tied bouquets there.
And what's across street?
It's on Amsterdam between 78th and 77th.
Okay. Because my friend Jenny Bergman owns a toy store on 84th and Amsterdam.
Oh, yeah?
Called West Side Kids. Yeah. So
cool.
It's Tina Fey made fun of it in her book because it has a lot of sort of handmade toys. Mm-hmm. There's like wooden toys. And Tina Fey was like, I love this toy store. But, you know, you go in and the kids are like, wood?
I want the bright things.
Right, that's not shiny enough. But it's a great toy store because it's sort of like going to like a museum gift shop when you go to West Side Kids.
Yeah.
Because it has such weird, like awesome, you know, kids' books, and then, you know, it's like science kits, and you know, it's just a little more glamorous than Target. So
thank God for that.
Yeah, needed. Always needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you want to tell me about flowers before we call it?
I did send flowers to Tina Fey once on behalf of Steve Martin.
You?
Yeah. That is one of the coolest parts of being a florist in New York City. You have these brushes with, you know, fame or celebrity.
Right.
I think when I was 19, I was cleaning the windows of the flower shop, and they were on Columbus. So they're super long, narrow windows. And I was on the top of this high ladder. And right when I stepped off the ladder and turned around, Robin Williams was walking by in a bowler hat and with a bicycle. And I was so like, oh my God, he's right there. You know? And he just said hello and kept walking. And, when I went home and told my family, they were like, why did you invite him to dinner? And I was like, what? I'm not going to invite Robin
That's
Williams
weird.
To dinner you in are, Queens.
You are correct. This is not, yes, my favorite year. Which is a great movie where Peter O'Toole gets invited to Queens to dinner. I have to say, you chose wisely. I thought that when you were in the window, you were maybe moving the reindeer around and Santa came by and told you that you had them in the wrong order. But
I think Robin Williams is kind of way better.
Way better than Santa. Well, it's true. I was eating at Barney Greengrass one time in the Upper West Side, and Frances McDormand was sitting at a table on the other side of the room.
Oh my gosh.
And I almost got up and walked over and lost my mind. And then I decided, much like you, to leave her alone.
Mm-hmm.
So she's trying to have a little lunch.
Yep.
A little smoked fish. She's trying to live her life, Jackie. Why don't you leave her alone?
Just let her be a human.
Barbara Milley, thank you so much for doing the Dork Forest. This was awesome.
Thank you for having me on, Jackie. And I would like to plug, I started a podcast.
Did you?
Yes, it's called Flower Stories.
Oh my God.
First episode, publication by the end of the month. And I'm just going to be talking to people in the industry. So wholesalers, designers, shop owners.
Oh my God. Yes. Flower Stories. Yeah. Send me whatever social media tag that will be. Mm-hmm. And, I will put that in the notes.
It's a flowerstories.org on Instagram.
ORG on Instagram.
Yeah.
So it's at flowerstories.org.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cause, somebody 7 years ago took Flower Stories and posted 5 things and then hasn't done anything since. So, the audacity.
The audacity. It makes me want to scream at the sky like Wolverine. You're not wrong. But Flower Stories, you could get in on the ground floor of Flower Stories podcast, everyone. So get in on that. And you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?